One of the many complicating factors of dealing with COVID-19 is how new it is to us. Nobody knew this disease a year ago. We learned a lot of lessons the hard way. A greater sense of predictability about the disease and its spread would be helpful. And now researchers from the San Francisco Bay Area have gained some knowledge from tracking COVID-19 cases in children. Their knowledge may help planning gatherings of children, like, for example, resuming in-person school. Let's explore the research with the senior researcher. Dr. Dylan Chan is a pediatric otolaryngologist, ear, nose, and throat doctor with the University of California, San Francisco's Benioff Children's Hospitals. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Chan.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Talk about the starting point for your work, if you would. What led you into this realm?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, back in March and April, all of our hospitals shut down, and you know, we weren't really able to provide anything other than emergency care for children. But starting in April, children's hospitals were sort of among the first institutions that were starting to ramp up again, caring for large groups of children. And as part of that, almost all of the children's hospitals started doing routine COVID testing for any kids that were coming in for procedures. And as ear, nose, and throat doctors, all of the surgeries that we do, a lot of the procedures that we do in clinic involve, you know, getting really up and close in kids' noses and throats. So we were, you know, very interested in knowing what the risk is of kids, asymptomatic kids, kids that didn't show any signs of COVID, coming in for our care. So what happened was that a bunch of us, about 40 or 50 of us at different children's hospitals across the country, realized at that point that all of these COVID testing results that we were doing on asymptomatic children coming in for care might actually tell us something about what the risk of COVID infection is among general populations of otherwise healthy kids in our communities. And as the COVID pandemic evolved and schools were then starting to talk about, well, what's the risk of COVID infection among groups of asymptomatic kids that are coming in for classrooms, we realized that we had an opportunity to you know, to potentially contribute to that question. So basically, we, you know, realizing that anyone working in an institutional setting with children really wants to know what the risk is that those children that they're working with have COVID and can spread COVID, we wanted to ask the question, you know, what is the prevalence of COVID infections among asymptomatic children? And so we were able to take the data from all of our testing that was done in our hospitals and compile that together to get an estimate of the prevalence of COVID infections.
All right, so the children studied, and we're talking a lot of children, 33,000, was it?
Yeah, and you know, this was across you know, across 28 different hospitals. So each hospital, you know, only had, I mean, as many as 3,000 or 4,000 cases, kids that were tested, but because we were able to get data from a broad sampling of hospitals, we were able to get testing results from quite a few children.
Okay, and they were all tested without showing symptoms, just automatically because they were going to the hospital for non-COVID treatments?
Exactly, yeah. So that was the key, right? So, you know, all of the numbers that we're seeing, you know, on the Hopkins database or reported to public health or, you know, the New York Times or whatever, those are people who are by and large tested because they had some concern for COVID or they had an exposure to someone who had COVID. And that, you know, that gives you a very limited estimate as to what the risk of COVID actually is in the general population, right? So because the children in our study were tested unrelated to any suspicion for COVID, we felt that it was a more representative estimate of what the prevalence is in the general population.
So is there a constant in the percentage of cases that are asymptomatic? Is it fairly consistent?
So that's what we found, yeah. And so because we were able to test from 28 different children's hospitals and 25 different metropolitan areas. At the time that we tested, those 25 metropolitan areas had very different overall rates of COVID, right? Mm-hmm. And we were able to look at the relationship between the reported confirmed COVID cases that are reported to the public health department and the asymptomatic pediatric prevalence rates that we tested in our children's population. And we found that that relationship was about 10 to 1 when looking at the weekly incidence, so over the course of 1 week, how many confirmed cases there were in the general population, which is the publicly reported number, mm-hmm. and our asymptomatic pediatric prevalence rate. So that was the relationship that we found across these 25 metro areas. And that can help us estimate now going forward the asymptomatic pediatric prevalence rate from the ongoing confirmed case numbers that are being constantly collected.
Dr. Dylan Chan is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a pediatric otolaryngologist at the University of California, San Francisco's Benioff Children's Hospitals in Oakland and San Francisco. He's the senior author of recent research published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Pediatrics publication on August 25th about finding asymptomatic cases of COVID-19 in the children's population and what this could indicate for example, schools. You can join us on the exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you got the data, you got a trend line, then how extrapolate from there?
Yeah, so, this confirmed case number is constantly being compiled and updated in this Johns Hopkins database. And those data are updated every single day for every county in the United States. It's publicly available. And so what we did is we developed an online risk calculator that takes that data from the Hopkins database, applies it to our model, and provides an estimate for each county in the country for a given time period of the asymptomatic pediatric prevalence. And so from that, you can estimate what the likelihood is that at least one kid out of a group of any number of kids has a COVID infection. So, for example, in Jackson County, Oregon, for the past week, there were about 0.3 cases of COVID reported per 1,000 people in the general population. And so we would calculate that the estimated rate of COVID infection in asymptomatic children would be about 0.5%. So 1 in 200 asymptomatic kids would be expected to have a COVID infection, an undetected COVID infection. Mm-hmm. So if you had a group of 10 asymptomatic kids in front of you, there would be about a 5% chance that at least one kid in that group of 10 would have a COVID infection. Now, what we don't know is how infectious that kid is, right? All we know that would be that if you tested all 10 of those kids with the standard PCR test, we stick a swab into the nose. If you tested each of those 10 kids, there would be about a 5% chance that one of those kids would test positive. Mm-hmm. What we really don't know, and what much more research is needed, is how infectious that asymptomatic COVID positive kid is. There's decent evidence that kids can certainly be asymptomatic carriers of COVID, that they can carry COVID and have, detectable COVID for, many weeks after their real active infection. And so, I would consider this to be an upper bound to, the actual risk of transmission. Mm-hmm. But it does give you an estimate, pretty reliable estimate as to what the risk is in a group of kids that there will be one kid that has a COVID infection.
The calculator is fascinating. I had not linked to it previously, but I certainly will by the time the morning is out. And just clicking around other parts of our region, I went from Jackson County, Oregon, to Siskiyou County, California. You can see the differences from county to county. So these are constantly updated every day. The Johns Hopkins numbers just get put in the back end of your calculator.
Yeah, so the Hopkins numbers are calculated every day. I update the data in this calculator every few days. I honestly haven't gotten around to actually automating the Hopkins update.
Mm-hmm.
But it's accurate. It was last updated a couple days ago. This is obviously not a replacement for directly testing all of the kids in a given county, which would be, the best way, the most accurate way of determining the current pediatric prevalence. And some school districts are doing that, some individual schools are doing that. But that's really that's not a very practical way of managing, or a sustainable way of managing things going forward. And so we hope that this kind of calculator at least provides a rough estimate that can help, parents and school administrators get a rough ballpark sense of what the risk level is in their region.
Again, our guest is Dr. Dylan Chan from the University of California, San Francisco Benioff Children's Hospitals, talking about the risk calculator for asymptomatic SARS-CoV-2 infection in children. You can choose a state, choose a county, and get some numbers in there. You can even ride the numbers up and down. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Ride the numbers up and down wasn't particularly descriptive. What I meant is you can change the group size in here, and I see the risk grows with the size of the group.
Right. Yeah. Naturally, it would. Right. The more kids that you have in front of you, the higher the chances that at least one of them will have an infection.
Mm-hmm. Now, so would kids going to the hospital necessarily be reflective of a general school age population? And does the age make a difference?
Yeah, that is a great question, and it is. The population of kids presenting for medical and surgical care is certainly not perfectly representative of the general population. There would be more sicker kids that are represented in there. I would say, however, that I'm a pediatric ear, nose, and throat doctor. Most of the kids that I see, either for surgery or in the clinic, are healthy kids coming off the street, getting evaluated for ear infections or their tonsils or something like that. So the majority of kids that would be represented in our population are healthy kids. The age distribution is a really great question. We were not able to distinguish to stratify by age in our population because of how we collected the data. It was all de-identified.
So you can't say with any level of surety elementary, middle school, high school, which of those might be different from the others, if at all.
Correct. We can't. There is decent other data suggesting that the older the kid, the higher the risk of them having an infection, and likely the higher the risk that they are infectious. But because we pooled across all kids 0 to 18, we can't say anything from our data about specific ages.
Now, do you find that people are using the tool, and if so, how?
Yeah, I've gotten some feedback from some school districts that are using the tool, and it to a certain extent, because it is an estimate that is pegged directly to the confirmed cases database. In terms of how it relatively assesses the risk from district to district or county to county, it's not so different from the standard measures that districts are using, like the confirmed case rate in their region or the test positivity. All of these things tend to correlate to each other. But having an estimate of the absolute number, that percentage risk, has been helpful in just getting your head wrapped around what the actual risk is in your school or in your district. And the reality is that, you know, with the state of COVID in the United States, there is no way of getting that risk down to zero. And there is no way that from a COVID infection standpoint, things are ever going to be completely safe. But understanding the magnitude of that risk has been helpful for administrators in their ability to communicate with their teachers, with the families in their school, and the confidence with which they can consider reopening.
Now, I noticed, too, that obviously the estimated rate of infection in a particular county is steady, but as the group size goes up, it's a steeper climb. I mean, the risk just get that much larger that there will be a positive case in a group of a larger size.
Yeah, and that's just that's just how the probability works, right? The more kids you have, the higher likelihood that at least one of them will have whatever it is you're looking at. I forget, there's some threshold at which if you have a group of a certain number of kids, the chance that two of them will share the same birthday is a lot higher than you think it would be.
Right. I remember hearing about that very thing just lately. Okay, so is there further tweaking going on with the risk calculator, or is it pretty well set now?
So there is actually, and the key part of this is that the model, right, that pegs the asymptomatic pediatric prevalence rate to the confirmed cases rate is dependent on some direct measurements, and the original data from our paper was from May and June, mm-hmm. From which we developed the original model. We updated that with another 13,000 kids from the month of July.
Okay.
And we're constantly refining that model based on new direct measurements that are coming in.
Okay, more stuff in there. The risk calculator, we'll put that put a link to it online at jeffexchange.org. Dr. Dylan Chan at the University of California, San Francisco, Benioff Children's Hospitals, thank you.